Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is Slava Rahr. And Slava is running for Congress in New York State, and he's running against the incumbent Paul Tanko. And Slava comes from Russia. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Russian-Ukraine conflict and how I just saw it escalating and it's frightening. So Slava, give us your take on what's going on.
Hi, Cynthia. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me back on the show. First of all, Americans, I feel like, don't really understand Russia very well a lot of the time. Russia has 22 republics. It's a very diverse country, Siberia. So when people say that, they're like, oh, that must be a really cold place. But it's a really different world, and I think Americans have to understand that. So I think a lot of what can be explained in the Ukraine conflict is generational trauma. You know, we have a paternalistic culture in the United States and in Russia. And both Americans and Russians, they tend to say, minimize trauma. They feel like they can kind of get away from it. But there's really no getting away from the type of trauma that both Russia and the U.S. have experienced. You know, when I don't know about you. When you were growing up, did you have to watch those videos of people hiding under tables because of nuclear threats?
Yeah, right? we had that when I was in grade school.
Right, and when I moved to America, I had a bomb shelter, you know. So talk about trauma and existential threat of nuclear weapons always pointing at your country, and having to live with the knowledge that the only thing that's deterring nuclear war is that you have an equal number of nuclear weapons pointed the other way. So I feel like in modern society, say again? In modern society, we ignore it, but we're traumatized by it in a very insidious and deep way. And I think what makes it a lot worse is that countries have political actors who use this generational trauma to their advantage. So if you watch Russian news media, it's filled with anti-American propaganda. And then in the U.S., we have, of course, had McCarthyism, and we have, even now, with establishment media, people who do not really present Russia with the empathy, understanding, and relatability that it deserves. And I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, there's 1.6 million Russian Americans living in the tri-state area, and yet there's never been a Russian American elected to Congress. So it kind of goes to show that there's a real undercurrent of attitudes against Russia in the American public, just like there's a very very much the same undercurrent in the Russian public against America. And America. And
let me ask you this question. What kind of, and I'm going to use the propaganda, in Russia, do people hear about the United States?
Yeah, the words you will hear most often talked about in relation to the United States. And I think it's not really an unfair thing to say, right? Because both Russia and the U.S.,
right.
Russia didn't become the biggest country in the world by being peaceful. And U.S. didn't become the most powerful and the wealthiest country in the world by being peaceful. Both countries have perpetrated genocide, wars, initiated violent anti-democratic regime changes in other countries. So I think it's fair to say that both countries have the most aggressive expansionist policies in the world. And in this dynamic, when you recognize this, countries like Cuba, they're really the victims. They're the ones that have to suffer because of U.S. and Russia expansionist policies. So let's talk a little bit about Ukraine. So in terms of Ukraine, you know, the reason why the crisis is coming to a head is because Putin has amassed like over 100,000 troops on the border. And those troops have a lot of heavy tanks and heavy equipment. But the border is very difficult to pass. It's very muddy. So it can only be navigated in the winter when the ground is frozen. And no surprises here, the ground is not yet frozen, right? Because we are also dealing with global warming. So the opportunity for Russia to invade is going to be very short. It might only be not even a couple of months, but maybe a couple of weeks. And so when people, it's just, I think, part of human psychology. When we have to act very quickly and make important decisions quickly, we tend to make mistakes. So the great danger in this situation is that Russia is going to make a huge mistake and invade Ukraine. And I think there's a number of reasons why invading Ukraine would be a huge mistake for Russia.
Okay, can you spell them out for us?
Yes, gladly. So first of all, Ukrainians are not the type of people that are gonna take a Russian invasion lying down, right? So Ukrainians have a history of guerrilla warfare, resistance. They have resisted Russian expansion on their soil in the past, and already, I mean, the Ukrainian government is already arming Ukrainians to stand up to Russia, and the U.S. government is also arming Ukrainians, right? So they're pursuing the so-called porcupine strategy, making Ukraine very resistant to any kind of occupation. But I think there's even bigger reason. First of all, if Russia takes over, the reason why Russia wants to take over Ukraine is because of NATO. So NATO, as I'm sure most listeners will know, is an alliance of European countries and of the United States that is a protection treaty. It's meant to prevent Russian expansion. But NATO itself has been expanding for decades. And NATO's expansion has brought it very, very close to Russian borders. And Russia feels very insecure because of this. And that's why Russia wants to invade Ukraine. But if Russia invades Ukraine, it'll just bring the NATO borders even closer to Russia. So it would be very, very counterproductive for the Russians to do that. And then the final reason is that countries like Finland and Sweden, which are not currently part of NATO, are much more likely to join NATO if Russia invades Ukraine, because they themselves will feel insecure and unsafe. But I think that this is to make, because like we started talking about generational trauma and how both Russia and the U.S. are these historically expansionist countries which are constantly trying to get bigger and bigger. And NATO is a bit of an extension of that, right? Because U.S. isn't literally expanding its borders, but by creating NATO, they're constantly expanding its influence. And the question I really have, both for the Ukraine and for the United States, is does expanding NATO make anyone safer at this point? And I don't think the answer to that is yes.
Okay, so what if Russia doesn't invade Ukraine? What would the United States do about that?
If Russia does invade Ukraine or doesn't invade Ukraine?
Does.
If Russia does invade Ukraine?
Yes. What would the response of the United States be?
Yeah. Well, I think the U.S. policy is not to start a military conflict with Russia, and the reason for that is because Ukraine is not part of NATO, and of course, a military conflict between Russia and the U.S. would be existential, right? So you never want to move in that direction. But I think U.S. has said that it's going to put a lot of sanctions on Russia, a lot of economic sanctions, and we can talk about whether sanctions actually work or not. My personal view is that generally sanctions have not worked. But U.S. is threatening a lot of sanctions, a lot of technological sanctions as well, trying to prevent Russia from getting technology. And then the last piece of that is arming Ukrainian rebels. Well, not rebels, arming Ukrainian resistance fighters who are going to fight against Russia, right? And so that last aspect of it, I think, is probably the most powerful deterrent strategy because, like I said, Russia wouldn't want to invade a country that is like a porcupine that is going to be extremely difficult to have as part of their expansionist policy.
Okay. So what do you see is happening? What do you think will happen in this situation? Because when I look at the news, I think about, you know, the 1960s and, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis and how scared everybody was. Should we be that worried?
Well, one thing I was saying is that both in the U.S. and in Russia, people use the fear of the other to their political advantage. I mean, in Russia, it's very obvious. But in the U.S., it also happens. Like the other day, I told someone I was a Democratic Socialist running for Congress, and they said, "Oh, you're a communist." And I said, "I'm not a communist." And they said, "No, you're communist. It's the same thing. There's no difference, right?" And it's just kind of like part of our society where we still use fear to build support, just like when we invaded Iraq and Bush used fear of weapons of mass destruction to rally the American people behind him to go into an unjust war under false pretenses. So I feel like we have to, as a public, as citizens, resist this urge to demonize the other country, right? I think as a public, we have to encourage our political leaders to move towards a policy of de-escalation and denuclearization, right? When we have this constant threat hanging over our heads with all these nuclear weapons pointing from one country to the other, it doesn't make anyone safer. Just like I would argue that the NATO expanding doesn't make anyone safer, right? Because the theory is that the bigger NATO is, the bigger that alliance, that it makes the more powerful it is, the more safe the members of that alliance are. But when you're talking about things like NATO and Russia, both of them have so many nuclear weapons and are so powerful that it's impossible to become even more powerful, right? A war between them, whether regardless of how big NATO is, would be existential to humanity and to our species as a whole. And so I think we have to encourage our political leaders to really temper this historic urgency and urge to continue expanding. Just like U.S. has always wants to expand and expand its sphere of influence, and Russia is trying to do the same, and NATO is trying to do the same. I think we have to pull it back a little bit and try to cooperate with countries like Russia and China in terms of letting other countries like Ukraine, like Cuba, like countries in South America, do their own thing and not impose our own will on other countries. And so I don't think anyone knows what Russia is going to decide to do, because like I said, even though invading Ukraine would be a huge mistake, Russia could make the huge miscalculation that now is the time and we have to act. And I don't know, you know, whether they will do that or not. No one knows that. I hope that if more Americans become educated on this and more Russians become educated on this and they speak up, then our governments will recognize that this aggressive expansionist policies that both countries have been pursuing is not going to lead to a peaceful resolution, because anytime something gets bigger and more powerful, eventually it meets outside resistance, and then eventually wars break out.
Okay, so you know both countries. You lived in both countries. What you see on the news, do you think this is all media hype to instill fear in people? What do you think?
I don't think this is media hype, but what I think is our media doesn't cover the whole story, right? So, I mean, did you know before I told you today that Russia has 22 republics within it?
Right.
Right. It's not something that our media ever talks about, like how diverse of a country Russia is. It's interesting, right? Because Russian Americans, they when they come to this country, they identify as not so much as immigrants. They don't identify so much with the immigrants. They start to identify with the fact that they're white, and they become part of. So let me just say this: the vast majority of Russians that I know are very conservative, and I think the reason for that is because they begin to identify with the sort of the Republican causes of creating like structurally racist policies in order to minimize the voting power of minorities and immigrants. And my hope is that with this campaign, a lot of Russians can see that they can also stand with immigrants and they can also stand with minorities and with their allies. And I hope also that the media, like you were saying, that the media can understand Russians better, right? I think right now there's this sort of caricature that gets painted, and I think it's based on a lot of this generational trauma that we talked about. So I hope that the media can get a more full picture of what it means to be a Russian American and also what it means to be a Russian. I think the media, the big thing the media doesn't do is they dismiss the fear that Russians have of NATO as illegitimate. So they say NATO is just a protective pact that is for self-defense. And so, you know, why would anyone fear it? But if you're living in Russia and you're constantly thinking that NATO, which is now getting bigger and bigger, is pointing all these nuclear weapons at your house, then you are going to be justifiably afraid of what U.S. and NATO might do. And the media doesn't cover that part. They don't present whether it's Russians or Iranians or Syrians or Iraqis. They don't always present them as complete human beings, as a complete picture of what their fear and what their trauma is and what their hopes and their dreams are. And when we don't get a complete picture so that we can empathize with people, that's when we begin to have these sort of hostile attitudes where we dehumanize them. So I think that's the problem with the media. It's not that there's too much hype. It's just that they don't present a full picture of the other side.
And it's the same thing in Russia?
Well, frankly, I think it's even worse in Russia. In Russia, the media presents an overtly hostile perspective on America, right? So in Russia, the political leaders are very good at using propaganda and anti-American propaganda to their advantage. And this doesn't just happen in Russia. I mean, this happens in a lot of countries where media is not independent, right? So while in the U.S. we have a media that is at least ostensibly independent, and I mean, sure, they're controlled by big money interests, but they're not controlled by our government. In Russia, it's kind of the opposite. The media is controlled by the government, and the government always tries to use media to shore up its support, to make, you know, the Russian leaders, including Putin, look very good, and also to focus in on enemies. And for the Russian media and the Russian government, U.S. is an enemy, right? So they never get tired about of talking about U.S. hypocrisy, right? So there is something to that. You know, U.S. itself has been invading countries for generations, right? Most recently, we've invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, and we've
right.
bombed people in Syria, right? And we've supported regimes like the Saudi Arabia and they're fighting against in Yemen. So there is a bit of U.S. hypocrisy, you know, when we try to make an argument that Russia shouldn't invade Ukraine on moral principles. And we say it's the wrong thing to do. Well, you know, who are we to say that it's the wrong thing to do when we've been doing it this whole time? I think as citizens we should be making the moral argument, but our government hasn't demonstrated that it is a moral actor. So that's why in this presentation I really try to talk about it from the Russian perspective and talking about how it's a big mistake. No matter how you look at it, right? It's going to be a mistake for Russia because it's going to make Russia suffer. It's going to make Russia a weaker country because it's going to bring NATO closer to their borders, because it's going to initiate warfare on Ukrainian soil in which people will die, right? And it's going to make Russia a weaker country because Finland and Sweden are going to be tempted to join NATO in the future, and other countries will be more quick to join NATO. So invading Ukraine, you know, will be a mistake for Russia, not just because of the human toll and the human life that it's going to take, but it's not just a moral mistake, but it's a political and military miscalculation and a mistake.
Let me ask you this question. Had Trump been elected to a second term, would this be going on now between Ukraine and Russia? And what would our response be from your perspective if that had happened?
Yeah. Well, that's such an interesting question. You know, I will not, I'm certainly very biased. I'm not someone who has ever been a Trump supporter. In fact, the whole reason I'm running is because I was so frustrated with Trump's policies. I think it's hard to know what would have happened, but Russia definitely saw Trump as a much more friendly president to them, and I imagine they would have hoped that they would have hoped that as long as Trump was president, Ukraine would never join NATO. And I think that that would probably be the case. But I think the thing that this analysis would miss is that there would be so many other things that would be destabilizing for the United States with a Trump presidency. First and foremost amongst these is if Trump was president, you know, we have to ask ourselves, how would he have become president? If Trump had become president by winning an election, that would be one thing. If Trump became president by making several states send delegates who were not elected to the Electoral College convention, then that would be so destabilizing for our democracy that I don't think I'm not sure whether we would survive as a even somewhat democratic country at all. So I don't know. I think it's very hard to know because Trump winning would imply so many other things outside of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, and it would be a very different world here today.
Okay, so Slava, I think this issue is not going away, and it's going to evolve. And as it evolves, I'd like to have you back on All Exits Closed so that people could hear your perspective as an immigrant from Russia to the United States. Would you be so inclined to do that?
I would love to do that. Thank you so much for inviting me here again. I really love talking to you. I love your questions. And if there's one thing that I can leave everyone with, it's that I really hope that our government pursues a policy that makes everyone safer. That should be the core goal of our government, just like it should be the core goal of the Russian and the Ukrainian government. And we have to find not the other way around. So thank you.
Okay, Slava, thank you for being on All Exits Closed. You've been listening to Rastislav Slava Ra. He's running for Congress, and he's challenging Paul Tonko. This is Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, follow us on Twitter. Slava, thank you for being on the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.